Welcome back to Dangerous Rhetoric, everyone. This is episode 122. I'm Dan.
I'm Brent Lee, and I like America.
Thank you guys for watching. Remember, like, comment, share, subscribe. All that stuff helps us a lot. And, you know, go back and watch all the conversations and leave your feedback. We love to hear it. With all of that said, today we are joined by two special guests. We have Chelly Bouffaraj, who has been on the show before. Hello, Chelly. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you guys.
Hey. And we got, for the first time, Tara. Let me not mess this up. Tara Fall.
That's me.
Yes, not Foul, Fall.
Yeah, although I don't really care. Everyone mispronounces both of my names.
How do they usually mispronounce? Do they say Foul?
Tara.
Foul.
And I just don't say anything. But then
they say Tara.
Yeah.
I've never even heard that. I'm like,
yeah, Tara. Well, it's like the British or Irish version.
Okay. That makes sense. No, I read it. I was like, that's Tara Fall. That's what that says.
I got awesome. Brett, Brantley. All the variations possible.
I don't. Everyone knows Dan or Daniel. It's like very super common. No one's gonna mispronounce that. But my last name is another story. You know, if it's all bunched together like this, people are like, oh, DeLafe.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's DeLafitte. It's like three words, DeLafitte. Anyway, all that aside, ladies, we brought you on today because we have been wanting to share some updates with people about what's going on in Portland. And we've been following that situation for a few years now, particularly since 2020. When the George Floyd riots and all of that stuff broke out. And that was why we originally had brought Chelly on a couple years ago to talk about that. And for those who don't know, Chelly and Tara are photojournalists, renegade photojournalists, we'll call them, and have put themselves into some very serious, dangerous situations to document what's going on over there. And I figured it would be a good idea to just bring you guys on together because I know you come on and you go onto the street often as a pair. So talk a little bit about that. Chelly, maybe you can go like do a short version of your backstory. I know you've been doing this since like 2017-ish, if I
recall. So I started working for a hometown newspaper in 2017. I'd always wanted to be a photojournalist and had a camera in hand since I was like 10. And so I got a job just working for the local paper, and then they had a Trump rally that came up that became national news because they wanted to stop it. So I had a friend at the Federalist, and I said, hey, do you want me to get pictures and a story from this thing? And she said, yes. So I came up and went to that, and I was hooked, you know, like just covering this because the narrative that the corporate media told was so inaccurate and like didn't even reflect the entirety of what happened that day on either side. And so I just kept going back. So,
yeah. And if people want a more thorough, you know, telling of Chelly's backstory, go watch episode 73, which crazy how many episodes we've shot since then. A lot of time has passed, but I'm glad we kept in touch. Tara, I want to know more about your backstory. How did you get involved in, you know, documenting what's going on over there in Portland? And your photographs are very striking.
Thank you. I got involved in it because everything was happening around me. Like I'm just here. So, I am an Oregonian and I grew up, on the coast here, and I've always been creative, like interested in taking pictures or drawing, and I paint and all of that. But yeah, I live in an area where there was riots happening in 2020, amongst many, many other things, street race takeovers and all that good stuff. So I realized that the media was, if not outright lying to us, they weren't being truthful about what was happening. And it was really just making me upset because I would have even family members who didn't live here trying to tell me that I was wrong about what I was seeing. Oh gosh. the vibrator. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
I saw that post the other day.
So yeah, I got interested in portraying the truth and approach it creatively. And I met Shelly in a dark park at night. Very sketchy situation with Antifa, and
they thought she was Antifa.
They thought I was with them, and I got beaten up, and yeah. I don't know. The rest is history. Yeah. So
interesting. Yeah, I think that the phenomenon you mentioned of people who aren't from there trying to tell you what's happening while you're there living it is interesting. Actually, I got into a disagreement in 2020 with an old friend of mine over this, because I was citing Andy Ngo, who you guys know and are friends with. I was citing one of his stories, and he was telling me like, oh, you know, you cherry pick data, like you're just showing one point of the narrative. I'm like, I'm not cherry picking. Like, this is someone who's there. They're there telling what's happening, documenting it. Like, to me, that's the type of person that I want to listen to. I'm like, you're not there in Portland right now. This guy is. So
it's really infuriating. And my family members would insist that everything was happening within like one block and everything was fine and blah. I'm like, you have no idea.
Yeah.
We still get that commentary, even from people who live here. Everything's fine.
Or there's no poop on the sidewalk. I don't know what you're talking about. That was like, the latest. You must be looking for it. How weird are you for looking for poop on the sidewalk? Like, is that your kink?
Right.
Yeah, I do. I feel like it's easy to do that, though, in today's like social media era, because, yeah, social media, it's of course, it's going to hone in on the negative shit. You know, it's the same with the news. That's the stuff that sells. So, you know, you kind of do have to assume sometimes that it's like probably not as bad as people say in any situation or place, because social media is going to hone in on the worst aspects of something, of a place or a person, et cetera. Yeah. But, you know, with Portland, I've heard so much bad stories and bad things coming out of there that it's kind of hard for me to not assume that it's just like chaos, you know. Obviously, I'm sure there are still nice, quaint areas there and places that are safe. But from what, you know, I can tell and from people who've been there, it seems like the environment generally feels unsafe.
It does. And you know that if something happens to you or your property, the law is
not going to protect you.
They're not going to protect you unless you're the right kind of person. And most of us aren't.
Correct.
Which is the story here in a sense, because that's crazy that is happening in the United States. And Portland's definitely not the only place that's happening in. But the two-tier justice system, it's like, you know, normal, regular, everyday people, it seems like the law is now more against us than the criminals.
Well, it's the end of the rule of law. We're now in this weird sort of like rule by ideology where if you're in the tribe, then you get carte blanche to sort of do whatever you want, including, you know, criminal activity. And if you are, you know, a heretic because you're a conservative or, you know, a white male or whatever, you will be targeted and have, you know, crimes conjured from thin air and laid upon you, because it's, you know, very much a case of show me the man and I'll show you the crime.
But, you know, I thought a good, an illustrative example of how the environment is over there is before we even came onto stream, you were joking about, like, I hope a drive-by doesn't happen, you know, and I know it's like nonchalant to you guys, but for people who aren't used to that sort of thing, that's crazy that's the normal for you. That is the norm. It's just like, I hope that some shootout doesn't happen outside my window.
Yeah, it's toned down some since 2020 and 2021. But a couple of days ago, somebody was shot in his car very close to my house. So, and it's loud and you can hear it. So, you know.
Well, there's an ever-present risk of just collateral damage, bullets flying, you know, who knows? Like,
people
get shot.
Well, this kind of brings up another question that I want to ask, and I'm sure you guys probably get asked this too by other people when they see the things you post and talk about. You know, they'll probably ask, well, why do you stay there if it is like that? You know, why stay? Why fight? Why do any of that? If it's such a dangerous place, if it's hopeless, you know, why not just leave?
Question.
Well, so I did leave in 2015. My garage got tagged. That had never happened before. Crime had risen. I got robbed. Like home invasion. I wasn't there, but they went and broke in the house and stole all of my jewelry. Then I saw that they were going to do a road diet with the road next to me and take it from 4 lanes to 2. And there was only, it was a main artery out of the city. And I thought, these people are insane, whoever's in charge here. So I'm out. So, but if I were still here, I know that it would be hard to leave. And Tara can tell you, like, maybe her reasons why it's hard to leave. But for a lot of people, it's not affordable to leave right now.
Yeah, I mean, just the economy and the interest rates that rose for real estate. If we sold our house now and we left and we tried to buy one somewhere else, our mortgage would be much, much higher. And we have 4 kids and we live on 1 income.
Man.
So we're doing that in Portland. I homeschool our kids. I don't make money. Like, yeah. So just that alone, plus my family lives here. We invested in a home in 2018 and just like trying to throw it all away and figure out where to go is difficult. We can't reinvest really in Oregon. It's too expensive. So we would have to leave and that would mean a lot of stuff. So it's not like, like some people, they rent and they can just pick up and go. That's fine. Like, that's yeah. Great. That's not us. So we're just dealing with it.
We do daydream about where we'd move if we could leave Oregon. So,
oh yeah. I hit Zillow when I get really angry. Like, you yeah. know, when I'm really upset, there's like Zillow. Yeah. Yeah.
I also have a guilty enjoyment of just like going to Zillow and like browsing, you know, mid like Appalachia, you know, like West yes. Virginia, Tennessee.
Yes, look at this beautiful Victorian I could raise my kids in. It
would be so nice. This like 40-acre property with like, well,
you know, doesn't hurt to have a backup plan. Doesn't yeah. hurt to have a backup plan, you know, just in case. You know, look at you know, Andy, for example. He had to leave in a sense for safety reasons.
Yes.
So, you know, there's also that aspect of it too. And when it starts to get to that point where you feel like, well, I can't even exist here anymore without my life being threatened, then I don't think there's any shame in leaving in that situation. But I think part of it too for people is just that sense of wanting to fight for your home. You know, it's like, it's your city just as much as it's the crazy radical Antifa people city who live there. And, you know,
yeah,
I think I understand why, you know, others are just like, well, I'm going to hunker down and try to change it. But typically it is something you're going to hear from, especially I would say like probably fellow like right-wing conservative or more moderate people who see you in that city. And when you complain about it or talk about what's happening, say, why don't you just leave? Why don't you just leave? It's just like, well,
you get this what is you worse. Voted for.
You voted get what you voted for. But it's like not everyone there voted for that stuff. Just they lost. They voted vote against it and lost. They got yeah. outvoted. But the point is, you know, you want to stay and fight for your home. It's your home as well. And I think that's not something that is just so easy to just dismiss. But I do see it all the time, you know. And it happened to us, me and Brent, you know, when we were in New York City. Why don't you just leave? It's like, well, we want to. But at the same time, if everyone who is fighting back leaves these places, they are just done. They're lost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am much, much like you guys. I'm also a victim of circumstance. So I totally understand. Like economics, like if you're trapped somewhere, it's very hard to just pick up and relocate, especially if you're into a mortgage and it's a decent rate.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say I'm a fifth generation Oregonian. We wagon trained here.
Wow.
I have deep roots where I live now. I went back to where my family's from. They literally settled, got off the wagon train and settled right where I live, maybe a few miles. And it's not just Portland affects the entire state. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it trickles down because it's the insane policies that they implement and it goes statewide, and we're actually pretty red, fairly red outside of the cities, but
yeah,
we're still ruled by idiots.
Yeah.
I had family members who lived here for many years. Yeah. Like my great grandparents, they used to go to the church that I got assaulted in front of on Rosa Parks.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Wow.
The night we met.
Yeah.
The night we met. The
night we met.
Well, I want to thank you, Tara, for your service and raising children well. Like, this has been like a little rant of mine lately has been thanking the straight people for doing
thanking the straight people.
Because, like, you guys are, like, literally making the future people. And so, like, I feel like the whole, like, we have this weird, in Western culture, there's this weird perverted idea that, like, making children is somehow wrong or it's bad or, you know, we're overpopulated, which is complete obvious, you know, poppycock nonsense. We're not overpopulated. We're nowhere near the planet's carrying capacity.
We're mismanaged.
We're mismanaged. Well, it's because we have psychopathic leadership on a global scale and a financial system that's largely based on bullshit.
Yes. Hey, absolutely.
It's like the Council of Wizards decides how much money there is, and then they print it and give it to all their friends, and the rest of us just get to fight over it. It's like, what?
Yeah. Well, the ideology that has spread around, especially in places like Portland, from the radical left, does want to eradicate family values, the idea of the family unit. It's just, oh, it's all malleable, you know. There is no difference between two dads raising
your kids or our kids. Like,
yeah, our kids, yeah. And which, you know, to an extent, I kind of get that. Yeah, it takes a village to raise a kid or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's like they literally want to make it a collective thing. We are collectively going to determine how you raise your kids and what you should be able to teach them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, or they just want you to stop having them all together.
Yeah,
there was a bunch of billboards in 2020 that said "Stop having kids," and it had a picture of a baby in the womb with like a circle and a cross, you know. And my kids are looking at that like it's. I'm driving my children past these to go to the grocery store or whatever, and they're looking at it and like my son, who was 7 at the time, he was like, "Well, that seems like a bad idea because if people don't have kids, then like everything will just end. Like, what are they talking about?"
Yeah, a 7-year-old can see that. Yes. You know, that's how obvious that is. But that's clearly not obvious to these people, or it is obvious. And they really do, I think, just like, they're just nihilistic. They just hate people. They hate humanity.
Anti-life.
Anti-life.
Nihilism in this town.
There is
a lot.
It's like a death cult.
It's weird. And it one is of the reasons difficult. That I like to talk to people in your position is because I see Portland as almost like a bellwether of like the dystopian future. Like you guys, it's like a look. Like if you look deeply into Portland and you really sort of like take a moment to see what's coming out of there and to grok what's happening, it really is sort of like a glance into the dystopian future for the rest of the country. Because when you see the drug abuse, when you see the homelessness, when you see the despair, when you see the sort of like government, bureaucracy telling people what morals are and at the same time, just like tolerating all this sort of chaos and facilitating it in some cases.
I'm looking through Tara's photos again right now. And
yeah,
I just saw the one of just the puddle of mushy, wet shit on the sidewalk, and I'm like,
I've stopped posting them. People were getting really mad at me.
She sends me
but it's reality. It's like
pictures of poop.
Here's the thing though, like, okay, I put this stuff out there and people get really mad at me for it, or they condemn us as Portlanders for the situation and think that the place that they live and the people that they're around are above it. And I'm saying, like, you need to take the warning, because the things that are happening to us are not necessarily our fault. Like, we're getting messed with by outside forces, too. And you're not immune to that. Like, it could happen to you. And you need to be on the lookout for the warnings, because it's coming your way.
Yep.
And so don't shoot the messenger.
The the Measure 110, that is something that the entire population voted on. It wasn't something put in by our legislature.
He's dead, by the way. He got murdered in his camp.
That's a terrible story. Measure 110 was voted on, and that decriminalized drugs. And the majority of the money for that came from out of state.
Yeah.
So
it was East Coast, right?
Yeah, it was the East Coast. Guys. And I think maybe some Silicon Valley billionaires.
Sorry. Yeah. It wasn't us, I swear.
So, you know,
people's homes can get messed with, and it's not necessarily going to be about the voting. I don't even know how, like, what to tell people to do about it, other than just be aware that your place is not immune. If it becomes valuable to mess with your city or your town, they will do it.
Yes. And I don't think it's difficult to overstate the ramifications of that Measure 110, the decriminalizing of the hard drugs. When you come here and you can step on the MAX train or step off the MAX train and smell urine constantly, and you're dodging shit on the sidewalks.
Human
shit.
Human.
And, you know, it smells terrible.
I got it in my boots one time and I couldn't get it out for like days. Bleach. I tried bleach. I tried like disinfectant spray, scrubbing, and I had to just detox them in the garage, and they're my favorite boots. I was really mad.
I know it's not cool to say third world countries anymore. I don't know I'm not even going to bother.
Canceled.
Go for that.
Oh, I say third world, primitive places. I say all the wrong things.
Right? I have visited third world countries, and it's not nearly as disgusting as things that I've seen in Portland and Seattle too. Seattle is a little bit better than Portland, but it's gross. I mean, when you see her picture, I had somebody come from out of town to film a little documentary, and she was very concerned that I wouldn't be able, or she wouldn't be able to find enough stuff to fill up her minutes that she would need it. And I said, oh, literally do not worry. We're just going to go park somewhere and start walking, and we're going to find stuff. And we got out of the car, and Tara was with us, and we saw a man that was overdosing, and they were trying to, somebody was trying to revive him while somebody was pickpocketing him while we were waiting for 911.
Oh, his pants were down too.
Oh, everything was out.
His dick was hanging out because he had just shot up in his groin next to the MAX stop.
Oh,
and
my
his
God.
Friend was like rifling through his pockets trying to find any leftover drugs
friend.
He had. This old woman, it was crazy. And I tried to cover him up. And she was like, he's
yanked
fine.
It off.
She yanked it off. I'm like, okay, whatever.
I don't want to see this.
I don't know.
So,
fuck.
Yeah.
Like, you can't make this shit up, you know? And I urge people, go on to Tara's Twitter @CocaineMichelle and just go scroll through her media and look at the pictures. The pictures speak for themselves.
The Aladdin Theater is where Antifa just showed up to harass a bunch of Jews who wanted to go to a concert.
They were protesting. Who was the?
It was Montes Yahoo.
Okay.
And they were going for it. It was, I showed up for a little bit and immediately started getting harassed, and I took off, but
yeah.
So one of the things I wanted to ask about too is, you know, you don't just go out and photograph, you talk to a lot of the people on the street as well, right? You talk to a lot of the homeless and the addicted and that sort of thing. You know, is that part of the reason you go out there too, is to document the stories of these people? Because I do find it's easy to use them as just political fodder, you know, to make your point, whether it's left or right. You know, the left want to say they're all victims, the right want to use them in shock value, right? But they are people. Like, these are people.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are hurting, a lot of them have been through shit, I'm sure, and they just get sucked into that world, and a lot of them never come out.
Yeah, that's the first time that I actually interviewed someone was about a year ago, and it was the man, Dave, who's in my Twitter feed. He was my first real street interview. And I just realized that there was incredible value in talking to these people and hearing their stories. And it became kind of like, not a mission of mine, but just an interest, and it doesn't have a political leaning, which probably makes people upset a lot of the time. Yeah.
Just documenting.
Yeah, just
Often that's what the artist really is supposed to do. We're not always supposed to comment or to have a political view on something. Sometimes it really is just bearing witness. We're here to bear witness and to capture the zeitgeist for posterity.
Yeah. It's just a place and time and people. And I find it very interesting and heartbreaking.
We have great stories. I mean, it's... I will say, and I don't, I think you'd probably say this too, we're both Christians, and, you know, I know that informs a lot of the things that I do, all of the things that I do, hopefully. And so when you see this, I mean, misery on the streets, it can't, you can't help but be heartbroken for them and want to know more about them. And, I got to meet Dave once. She met him one time before that, and he had his dog, who I think was named Annie. Do you remember? Anyway, so, and I love dogs. So I was talking to him about his dog and petting her, and she was so well behaved. And you could tell he just loved this dog. And when we walked away, I remember thinking, I hope he's okay, you know, like, because I think about his dog and like, clearly she's part of what sustains him. And I don't know exactly what happened. I think Tara knows better, but he got ran over by somebody.
Yeah, there was a violent criminal who was released to roam the streets in Oregon, like usual.
Yeah.
And he ran people over. I believe he was homeless. And he had a stolen vehicle and he ran through a camp and he intended to run people over and he got Dave, who had nothing to do with him or anything really, but he ran
That's
him over.
Crazy. So yeah. just a random act of just violence for no reason. There wasn't any provocation.
He had some kind of an argument with somebody in this one camp earlier. He said he would come back and run people over or run over.
Gotcha.
The camp. And this wasn't Dave's camp. He didn't live there. He just showed up to visit with a friend, I guess. And incidentally.
How many of these camps would you say are in Portland?
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. It's
they're
hard to
all
say,
over.
Because there's not just a camp. Like they yeah. merge and they're all over.
And they get moved. And there's camps that we probably haven't even seen.
Oh, they're like, they're in the woods. There's
hundreds
mass.
Of them.
Yeah, it's.
Hundreds.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
But it's like whack-a-mole and they get moved around like from place to place constantly. Like they were removing the camp that Dave got killed in when I went and talked to people the other day. But they're just across the street. I mean, they just, the same stuff moved from that one place and is now sitting on the other side of MLK. I was just there. I'm like, oh, look at all the things I just saw yesterday. Like
moved across the street. Yeah. I actually did a drive today before I got here that I took the drive that I would have taken when I lived here, like a normal route. And I knew there were camps along that route. And there's this one area on Powell that was particularly bad. They have these little parkway, little areas to park, to take the bus. And they were filling up with tents and garbage and vehicles and, you know, a lot. Oh, so much garbage. And like, I remember driving one by one night, I was with Andy and we look over and there's like a fire, like a campfire, like everybody's standing around. That was kind of crazy, but they were all gone. And I think part of the reason why I think the city is now facing a very expensive lawsuit because an Uber driver was trying to pull out from one of those, or maybe a Dash, DoorDasher. And there was a young guy on a motorcycle coming up the road. And I think he was going fast and you couldn't see because of the camps.
Yeah.
And he, it was a terrible, I'll just say it was a terrible, terrible accident. Like, yeah, people who were there had to get counseling after they tried to, there was no helping him, but, and people had been asking them, please move these camps. It's a dangerous to the houses, to the people who live here. And it's a danger for traffic. And the city just didn't care. So.
Is that around where Powell's Books is?
No, actually.
No, it's not.
this is not on Powell Boulevard.
Weirdly. I wasn't sure. I haven't been to Oregon at all, or Portland, obviously. But that is one of the like things I would do if I went to Portland.
Oh, yeah.
Powell's is great.
It's legendary. It's huge. Although
I'm aware. I've seen pictures. I've read about it. It's like one of my
nightmare now.
It's a nightmare now.
Woke nightmare. Oh, although man. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. Like it's this mass amount of books and stuff. Like yeah. You can find anything there. But all of their displays and all of like the things that
they're all Lean's left
are terrible. Like yeah. I take my kids there and they laugh at it hysterically. They're like, wow, that's really stupid.
That's even a shame.
Like, you sound stupid. Like the Latinx thing, just all, like every, yeah. Yeah.
I still want to visit though, just because I know it's a legendary store. Here,
and we could take you on a tour.
Oh, we'll
that would be interesting. Brent, we should plan a little trip and do some dangerous rhetoric on the ground over there.
I have a dog and no money. It's hard for me to travel.
We are Brent.
I would love to. I get somebody to watch my dog.
I'm sure we could put you. I could put you up, but you'd have to. We'd have to drive a ways to get to town.
Yeah. Well, you can stay in my basement, but need extra shoes in case you step.
Yeah, you have to have at least 3 pairs of shoes.
Is that real? Are you serious?
Shoes are laying in the streets everywhere, so we can find you something, but they might not match.
is the human feces issue really that bad over there?
Yes, it is. It's not everywhere. But it is like people just take dumps in the sidewalk or in the street. Like I've seen piles of human poop with like tire treads through them. Oh, it's so bad.
So we went out taking pictures like, what, was it 2 weeks ago, I think.
Yeah.
We had a meeting to go to. Sorry. It's so gross. And I'm like, she's like, I'm going to find you some poop. I'm like, please don't.
I will find you some poop. I love you so much.
We found so much poop.
Immediately. It was like
everywhere.
It was not even,
like, I'm looking at this picture of the meat grinder engine part thing.
Oh,
it was my like,
poop in it.
I couldn't believe
like, let me send this to Brett.
Hold I could not believe I found that. And there's like,
my God.
In the back of it.
So dainty.
What? Oh my God.
I texted my husband. I'm like, oh my gosh, this trip was so worth it.
I haven't got a poop text in a while. Thank
I'm
goodness.
Trying to be caring.
Oh,
that's poop.
That like someone just put the that. Poop. They pooped in it or they like put it there?
Oh, I don't know.
You know,
they, I mean, clearly, but I like how you pointed out they even took the time to like tuck their like napkin wipe.
He didn't. In I love fly away.
It definitely a used wipe. I do my research. I try to like keep it above board here. I try to make sure that things are human and not dog. And don't ask me how I know. It's just experience.
Well, the wipe kind of indicates obviously a person did that, and a dog is clearly not gonna.
Be that
shit.
Yeah. There are bathrooms. That's a lot for a dog.
There are bathrooms down there. And I went out one time and I wasn't with her. And it was like this very fancy, like outdoor bathroom, not like a permanent one, but like one of the fancier ones that they move. And I'm like, okay, I've seen poop out here, but I'm going to look in the bathroom and just see, like, is this getting used? It was like opening the door to the 7th level of hell. Like I was like immediately dry heaving on the side of it. I've never seen, I don't understand how anything looks like that. Like, I don't even want to describe it to you. There's a video somewhere on my timeline, but it was a while back.
I have some outhouse photos myself, which are something else.
Because you think if they just put in more outhouses, maybe this won't be a problem.
I did. Okay, though, the last one I looked in Chinatown, aside from the urinal being clogged by toilet paper, it was not that bad.
Yeah, but wasn't that the one they said that had just got there like 2 days before?
Maybe, but that was the same day that I saw that guy taking a shit on the sidewalk, like across the road. So, and then I went and looked and I'm like, okay, I can't like say that this porta potty is unusable. It's not.
Not everybody is mentally aware enough on the streets. And that's the other thing too. It's really hard to explain to people how mentally ill some of these people are that you're seeing on the streets. Like
the lady who showed me her vibrator.
I saw that picture recently. Well, this kind of raises another question. Should we open the asylums again?
Yes. Yes. I think so. I think there are so many people that are probably schizophrenic, they're psychotic in some way, and that would benefit from treatment, and it would make the neighborhood safer.
At least the violent ones. Like,
yeah.
I've had people try to kill me before because the voices in their head are unfriendly. Or the guy who threw his car at me.
Camps are effectively open air asylums with no oversight or security or medication. So
except for street drugs that might kill you or make you even crazier.
Yeah.
So
you said someone threw something at you? I missed what you said they threw at. A guitar?
Got, like, super triggered by nothing
the sight about of me. Her.
And I'm standing, like, in the Lloyd District, if anyone knows where that is. And this guy just starts screaming at me. He's calling me, can I say it?
It's one of those words you're not supposed to say.
N-word, bitch. N-word, bitch. Man. Clearly, I'm not even, like.
I was going to say, you're not even.
He's yelling this at me. He was white. And he got really angry. And then he was carrying a guitar and he just he was hucking ice at me, actually, because it was during the ice storm. He was picking up chunks of ice and trying to throw them across the road at me. And I'm just laughing because I'm like, you're not very good at throwing. It's not going to reach me.
I would have been like, let's get out of here.
And then he threw this guitar at me. And it exploded in the middle of the road.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a lot of insanity on display on the regular in Portland. Like, if you guys came here right now, we could go out and within probably 20 minutes, we could easily find two or three people at least having like normal psychotic episodes for them.
Yeah.
So yeah,
we were seeing that a bit in New York.
But it's just
more of a regular thing around the pandemic.
It definitely became more regular, but because of just New York and how much people are there, it doesn't seem as bad, I think.
You guys have it more diluted, probably.
Like, it's diluted. That's a good way to put it.
It is. And also, I think New York does maintain some semblance of law and order. I mean, it's been failing recently with all the illegals and the drama, but the city was doing, you know, comparatively well in maintaining a general sort of order until the illegal immigrant crisis and the lockdowns. The lockdowns was when I started to see people taking dumps and going to the bathroom in the street on Billionaires Row, 57th Street, right outside of Carnegie Hall. Like, it was
the bathrooms, right? Like, did you guys have all your public restrooms shut down?
There really aren't that many like public restrooms in New Manhattan. There's a couple in Central Park. And those, I don't think they shut them down for the pandemic.
But like, could you go in the Starbucks and use the bathroom? Is that like here?
If you were like wearing a mask and like did all the things. We left New York during the height of it because the masking and the proving that you were vaccinated was too ubiquitous. And
well, we needed to get away after the feds showed up and get some breathing room. But also it was just a matter of, well, I'm not going to spend my revenue in this place. I'm going to go take it and put that revenue somewhere else. You know, if you're going to segregate me here and treat me like a second class citizen, then fuck you. I'm going to take my money and spend it elsewhere.
Yeah.
It's basically, it was that.
Here again,
yeah, because for sure.
I remember, and they're on my list.
They're on your list, yeah.
I'm on their list, and they're on mine.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, with that said, and with everything else that we've said, I also wanted to ask, I guess, you know, what you ladies think are still, like, some of the positive aspects of Portland, things about Portland that you do like. You know, just to be fair here, and just so people don't think we're just trying to, like, shit on the place, because it's all pun intended with that one.
Yeah. Nobody would blink an eye.
And I would take a picture of it.
And you would take a picture of it.
The cappuccinos.
Good call.
Portland has, even in spite of all the restaurants closing, the food scene here is phenomenal. Like, it is phenomenal. But I'll tell you what, this is my problem. I go into a place now and I'm immediately looking around going, I think these people might hate me.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
especially when the code on their bathroom is an Antifa code.
ACAB.
Yeah. Stumptown. I'm looking at you.
Yeah, 1312. It's like
1312.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and it's written on the door, and I was like, "Come on, guys."
For those who don't know what ACAB is, it means all cops are bastards, or all cops are bad, either or.
Bastards.
Yeah.
What it really means is that they want to be the cops. That's what it means.
Yeah. That's exactly what that means.
They would love to have power and to stomp on anyone they feel like stomping on.
Right. They become the brown shirts of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Very quickly.
100%. For sure.
So it used to be living here. I lived here from like 91 to 2015. So when I got here in 91, the neighborhood, I never lived in super nice neighborhoods, but like it was called Felony Flats, but it was just kind of,
this sounds so fun to me.
They had more felons per square mile there than anywhere else in the state.
Wow.
However, it was kind of on its way up and cute houses. And it was super, like, I bought my first house for $110,000. So, and it just sold, that house sold last year for over $500,000.
Holy shit.
Not a great neighborhood now.
You could have like cooked meth in there and then paid off the money fast.
Jelly Breaks Bad.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Somebody actually, truthfully, had cooked. There was a meth lab that had been in the basement.
I
of my
say
house
that because our neighbors had
in the like, early 80s.
Yeah.
So it was kind of an area where meth was ubiquitous, and my house in the 70s was the neighborhood speakeasy.
So funny. Yeah, our neighbors had like the meth house. They had to really gut that place to sell it, and they basically had to give it away.
So Portland was kind of rough and sketchy, but when I arrived here, you could do or be anything you wanted to be. You know, that whole Portlandia show, there's a more than a grain of truth in that. And so, and I never even worried about being conservative politically, you know, and I was, I loved the arts, and the art scene here was amazing, and the food, and it was really easy to own and run a business. I had a really good business here. And when I had kids, I could walk around with them at 11 o'clock at night, like say I want to put them in the stroller and they weren't sleeping. I would have not even thought about it. Like, it's totally safe where I lived. And the parks were beautiful. I didn't have to worry about needles or human excrement or people having psychotic breakdowns in the parks. And so it was just like this great place to raise kids. And yet you still had the culture and great shopping and great food. It was like the best of all worlds, a big city in a small city. And it was exciting and fun and free. And that was what made the city so wonderful. And as you can imagine, that's gone. So you have left the restaurants and some of the cool things you can buy and the parks, but everything is tainted by all of these policies. So for me, it's hard to say something positive other than the bones of why it was great are still intact. But
yeah, they're all so, kind of perverted though.
Yeah.
It all what?
Perverted.
All of the good things got perverted.
Tainted,
like
not
necessarily in like sexual way, but just like the Keep Portland Weird thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you have to be the right kind of weird.
Yes.
And if you're not the right kind of weird, then you're like still out.
Yeah, you don't want to be creepy weird. You want to be kind of weird.
You have to be in the club. And if you're not in the club, like whatever, you know, woke version of
they
the
will
is,
ruthlessly cancel
they will destroy
you.
Destroy you.
Yeah.
They hate kids here now, so it's like,
and it's even invaded the churches here too.
It has, and like the whole, like one of the cool things here was people loved decorating stuff. Like they would decorate the public with stickers and yarn bombing, and like
put a bird on
kind
it,
kind of. But like they would just decorate stuff with posters and creativity, and now all that stuff is like gross stuff.
Yeah, political slogans.
It is, and it's like
shitty graffiti.
Kill all cops, or like whatever it is. It's like
it's
not
the worst.
Creative anymore. It's just sad, and I don't know. So
Portland is literally, if you can take a deep look at it, it is cultural Marxism. Like, I mean, if you want to know what the future is, and like you can look at what's going on here and what's how it was implemented and what you're looking at right now. And that is the future, potentially, if it's not stopped.
You know, yeah. One of the good things here is that unless you get hit by a traffic camera, if you're speeding, nothing happens to you.
Yeah, because there's no really anybody we patrolling don't really have the traffic streets. Cops, yeah.
Like, so you can just do whatever you want. Like, I drive as I want. And...
So it's almost like just a free for all at this point.
Yeah.
In some ways, yes. Yeah, unless you're a conservative.
You can jaywalk all over Multnomah County and nothing happens to you.
Yeah.
I have jaywalked while hanging out with the police.
Yeah.
And they don't care.
Yeah.
So the situation, though, if I recall correctly, you know, from last time we spoke with Chelly a couple of years ago, this shift really started when Trump was elected, but it really started to pick up in 2017. Maybe you can backtrack a little bit and talk a little bit about that, too. Because you know, you talked about that rally you went to, and then there was also a murder I remember you discussing.
Yes.
On public transportation, and how all of this kind of set the tone for the narrative that arose there.
Well, so Portland has been referred to as Little Beirut for a long time, like before, is it the WTO? Is that back in there? Late 90s or the early 2000s. I can't remember when that happened because I was raising children. So, and not out riding on the streets, but they've always had the element of anarchists and sharps and, you know, people. I actually figured out not too long after I hired her, I hired a swimming teacher when I had a swim school that was a member of the Earth Liberation Foundation. I was like, ooh.
Don't
so
they want everyone to die or something?
Yeah. There's a radical element that has always been present. But once Trump got elected, and I think that was such a shock, and they wouldn't like Hillary either, but the idea that a Republican won and Trump, you know, they hit the streets immediately in 2016 and they rioted for quite a while.
Resist. What? I don't know.
that got some local people woke up like, whoa, what's going on here? This is, you know, this is not cool. We should be able to celebrate this president. And this local guy decided he was going to start having Trump rallies. And so I'm going to say the whole narrative for what happened with Trump supporters really came out of Portland. So that narrative that they're violent, Nazi, racist, homophobic, anti-trans, the people who stood up and proudly proclaimed that they love Trump got labeled all kinds of these things by local media, including like some of the local print publications that would be corporate media. And people from out of town, if they came in to cover some riot that was going to happen by the Proud Boys, you know, they would just pick the local narrative and run with it. So, and I'm not sure where you want me to go with that, but there was some violent acts that occurred, two different things that in particular, and the one was a man named Jeremy Christian that was on the MAX train and started harassing these young Black girls that were Muslims, and people stood up to stop him. And he slit the throat of three men, and two of them died on the spot and one of them survived. And the one who survived was affiliated with Antifa and had actually been seen in video with him like the month before. Not that they were friends. They were, you know, Christian was mentally ill. He'd been in the prison system. He had a thick file on his mental illness. So he was like a known quantity to the cops, and he was known to have problems, and he wasn't affiliated with the right or the left, but the guy on the left was harassing him. And I believe escalated the situation from what I heard. And that's when he slit their throats. And the narrative immediately became that the man who killed these people was with Patriot Prayer and was on the right. And, you know, and so they just smeared everybody. So from then on,
when was this exactly, this event?
In May of 2017. It was about 3 weeks before this Trump rally was scheduled. And they didn't want to have it
It was before Charlottesville too, because I was looking that up. Charlottesville was in August 2017. Yes. So you're right. It does kind of seem like the narrative of all these people are just Nazis and all that to kind of start it with this incident. Like that happened first before Charlottesville.
One of the people covering this was Jason Wilson, who then worked, I believe, for The Guardian, and he may still, but he works for the SPLC. He is the worst of the propagandists. And he, his message and Andy's message and anybody on the right who was covering it, our message completely was opposed. And he was labeling all of these people, especially he's really responsible for the rhetoric around Proud Boys at that time. And saying that they were Nazis and that Patriot Prayer, that was the group that was sponsoring these rallies, that they were Nazis and homophobic. And so he pushed that and it went national. And you can actually look at the articles and kind of trace how that narrative took hold. And then Charlottesville happened and then it was set.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Interesting piece of lore. Well,
2020, the one other murder that I would want to mention is they actually had, you know, they were rioting every night. And I don't know what they were doing that night, but earlier in the day, they had scheduled a Trump truck rally. And so they had all these good old boys with, you know, these huge trucks. And they had people in the back of the trucks and they met at Clackamas Town Center, which was in a suburb. And they drove all the way into downtown. And some of the people in the back of the trucks had pellet guns, bear spray and whatever. Because honestly, at that point, if you were going to go in downtown, you were going to get hurt or you're going to get bear sprayed by Antifa, by the leftists.
Or they were going to come smash your vehicle while you're stuck in traffic.
Like, I mean, they did a lot.
They fully intended to come, like, destroy anyone with an offending opinion in the city. Like, it was extremely intolerant.
I can't tell you how many people I know that lost tires multiple times.
It was an intolerant situation.
I know a guy who had, he actually is, I think he works on trucks, like doing body work, and he had a beautiful truck. And it was like, I mean, they literally destroyed it inside and out. Paint, windows, tires.
They wanted to make people afraid to come into the city.
And they said that.
With an opposing viewpoint. Yeah. And they were like proud of it.
Hate has no home here.
Yeah. But it's because they managed to demonize these very normal people.
To the point where they were normal people.
Justified. Well, you know, they're Nazis, so we have to make sure that they stay out of here. Like, we can't tolerate Nazis here.
So they incited the violence against these people with their rhetoric, and the media helped. And a lot of it was planned on Twitter at that point. These people drove into downtown and of course it was a disaster and they claimed that somebody tried to run them over. Probably they were standing in front of a big 4x4 truck, you know,
in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
And, you don't really want to stop with these people surrounding your vehicle.
Yeah.
And
they'll swarm you. And they'll
And they're blaming the people for going into downtown.
Yeah. You should know. You can't go downtown. You can't do that. Like a Trump flag. Yeah. You can't do that. Like, what do you think is going to happen to you?
Like, you don't own the streets. Like, you don't own the streets. If I want to walk down Main Street in Portland, Oregon, in an American flag bikini, it would never happen, and a Trump flag and a megaphone, I should be able to do that. And there should be no threat of violence. Like, I mean, they can say they are going to hurt me, but I shouldn't have to worry that anything bad is going to happen.
It's like saying that you shouldn't go to that place if you're Black. Like,
or like, that was a pretty short skirt you were wearing. So what do you
expect? You asked for it. Yeah.
It is though, like saying, well, if you were Black, you probably shouldn't have been in that neighborhood. Like, of course they're going to beat you up. They don't trust you.
I mean, like, they 100%, that was what they pushed forward for about these people. And, you know, there are people who were just like, you know what? No, we're going to go anyway. And we're going to show the world what Portland is about. And the problem was you couldn't get that message out about what actually happened because the media was complicit in the propaganda machine. And so the story would come out, Proud Boys were violent in downtown. And in reality, maybe they threw a punch because, you know, somebody was, I know they got threatened with knives before. So that night, The trucks left. It was a crap show. Joey Gibson of Patriot Prayer was crap walking. I'm being nice.
You mean shit.
I mean, yeah, you just want me to say shit. Joey was a Patriot Prayer was walking to downtown and he got so pepper sprayed, and he was always nonviolent, you know, pacifist. He was pepper sprayed so badly he was blinded. They led him into this glass walled like 7-Eleven, and it was all on a live on Facebook, and they were pounding on the windows for them. The guy who was operating the store locked the doors. They were going to kill him. In the meantime, there's these two guys who are walking in downtown, and this man who had just tattooed a big, you know, black power fist on the back, on his neck. He was a white guy, was in downtown. And in my opinion, he was hunting this guy. When you look at the videos, he was watching this guy's movements, and he shot him and killed him on the streets. And then he took off.
I think I saw that got caught on video, right?
Yes, yeah, it was caught on video.
I remember that when that was going around.
Yeah, he came out and shot him. It was
an ambush.
Antifa. Yeah.
And I had seen that man with his husky, because I noticed his dog down at the riots, you know, and he was just different, you know, because that tattoo, and he had his daughter down there with him, I think, and she was a child. It's not really a place for a child, but
no.
They still, like, that man ended up getting shot by the cops up in Washington when they tried to arrest him. But there was never a sense that, I don't want to say that he didn't do anything wrong, but it was almost like Aaron, was his name, deserved it. And there is Antifa still saying that, you know, oh, it was self-defense. So I don't know. So they normalized violence against people on the right.
They did. And they didn't even want to talk about it. Like, the one person who gets murdered here is on the right, and they want to talk about
like, do you hear about that? Like,
you don't.
He's, you know,
and he didn't even do anything. Like, they weren't even fighting. He was just walking.
Just walking. And he didn't even have a chance to, I guess he had bear spray.
He pulled out the spray and it got shot and exploded.
Yeah, he didn't even get to spray it.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, he literally was just walking down the street. So Portland is where they normalize violence against people on the right. I guess that's my point.
And you don't even have to be an actual extremist Nazi racist or any of that. You just have to be just a little bit conservative.
Well, they just say that about you and it sticks.
We have both been assaulted. So.
And called white supremacists. Nazis,
yeah.
Alt-right, neo-Nazi.
Yeah.
I had someone yelling that at me last week. Oh, it's Tara, the white supremacist, the neo-Nazi, the pedophile. Like, they just stick it on you so you can justify attacking.
I've gotten called a pedophile.
It's a dehumanization tactic, but, you know, it's retaliation, because they know you're documenting what's actually happening and you're not doing the media spin like the media is doing to paint them all as the freedom fighters and all this shit. It's why they beat Andy up. It's the same exact reason. They're like, and that even goes against their narrative too, with all this identity politics shit. It's like, you beat up a gay Asian man. And it's like, where the hell was the media over that?
Like, I was there that day. He wasn't, like, he literally was so quiet. I mean, I, like, chased after one of them after they, you know, milkshaked him. And, like, he was just stoic and did his job. And they beat the crap out of him. And they've made up all kinds of stories about him as well.
Yep.
So.
Well, they showed up to attack, like, Jewish people in an event the other night. And they like to try to call people anti-Semitic for nothing. Like, they don't even have to do anything. Oh, you're such an anti-Semite. And then they're like, well, it's fine if we go attack the Jews because, like, we're justified.
We have the right opinions.
Like, what?
Well, it's like what you know, it's emblematic in how the left uses language. They don't use it to communicate, meaning they use it as a weapon. So they use it to slander people ad hominem. They like to attack people by slandering their character.
Yeah, and they change words to be convenient for them when they need it to match.
Yeah. And also they'll reverse things. So they'll project their crimes onto people. So they'll commit acts of terrorism. They'll act as, you know, a Nazi thug enforcer, and they'll accuse people, you know, they'll accuse their victims of that very thing. It keeps the whole objective analysis of what's happening very topsy-turvy. It's very, you know, because there's, you know, it's like, oh, there's two sides and blah, 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 instead of just seeing, like, these people are clearly, like, disturbed, you know, predators organized now under a flag and ideology, and getting, you know, bonus from the local media and local government. It's mm-hmm. it's disturbing and scary, and it is a snapshot of what could happen in the rest of the country.
Yeah, well, it is going in that direction in other places too. And you know, we're friends with Josh and Kevin from Disaffected and
Burlington.
They talk about what's happening in Burlington, Vermont, and it's kind of like a precursor to Portland. You know, it's like you see it heading in that direction. You know, Burlington. Crime is starting to rise. Graffiti very much starting like to become the more East common. Coast. It's not bad like that yet. You know, it's for the most part, Burlington is, you know, kind of quaint and it's cute over there. But there's definitely like this sort of like Stepford Wives and, you know, invasion of the body snatchers uniformity about the place. That's odd. When you go there, like the people look the same. They like
the clothing. It's like you so walk weird. Into a fucking what's that outlet? Shit.
REI.
It's the REI. It's like you walked into an REI, like, you know, set, and all the locals are just like, you know, all outfitted, you know, in the same sort of generic.
The shops too, like you walk down, you know, Church Street, where all the, like, you know, where the business district is, and it's like almost every single storefront has the progress flag, meaning the gay, you know, the gay flag with the fucking triangle with the black and stripes, and it's all so they'll have that and like Black Lives Matter.
It's
and
religion. It's
just like almost like every business, and not just businesses. Like you go down, I remember when we were driving through some of the back streets in like the suburban areas too, people would put Black Lives Matter signs in like their home windows or fly the flag as if it was their country. Yeah, or something.
That's oh, everywhere right. here.
Yeah.
So it's starting to look like that in Burlington, but it's not as bad as like Portland yet. You know, there are radicals there. You know, and they're somewhat dangerous, but so far it's not as bad as where they're like hunting you down and that kind of thing. But it's getting there.
What the special ingredient is that flips that, you know, that makes it go radical. And reversely, I don't know how, I'm not entirely sure how you de-radicalize or stop a movement like that beyond you have to wake up normie norm and yeah. normie norma. They're asleep and they don't understand. And, you know, I've got a life and they don't really like my mom. So sweet. She's a Republican, but, you know, she's watches CBS News. And so like, I find myself explaining to her things. No, Nikki Haley is not winning. I know that they told you that.
Yeah.
He's not, yeah. you know, like, so it's all these.
Yeah.
All, and my mom's a smart lady, but, you know, it's all these people that just get the news from the news station they'd always get from. It's just they've never really thought yeah. about this stuff, and it's a pain to have to redo your entire worldview.
With Burlington, yeah. I got this like impression there that because it really is a beautiful, lovely city, and I almost got the impression that a lot of the signaling you were seeing in along the houses in the neighborhoods is like almost like they feel guilty that they live in such a nice, beautiful place that they have to just signal, you know, look, we care about the minorities and Black Lives Matter. Look, I put it in my window just so everyone knows, you know, I'm fighting, I'm an ally. But I think part of it is just like they feel bad about living in a nice place and having things and having a home. And it's like you shouldn't feel bad about any of that. There's nothing to feel guilty about owning things, working hard. Like,
I think so.
Are we like on the same latitude as Vermont? Because the scenery is really similar.
Yeah.
And the people are similar.
Yes.
Maybe it's a latitudinal.
Maybe.
Like posted. It's like only on the coast.
Right.
Water.
Like not the closer you get to Canada, I feel like it just gets cooler. Yeah. It's like it gets more woke.
Yes.
But you have to be on the water. The water brings in the crazy.
The water brings in the crazies.
Yeah.
It's like
it comes off the ocean in a gentle breeze.
Yes.
And then
that's a good theory.
Wokeness.
Maybe it is that. I mean, they are along the coast too.
We have a lot of in the last, like there's this gorgeous town. It used to be my favorite place. It was Bend, Oregon. And it's grown massively, and I call it California North, but it's all these uber liberal progressive elements that have moved in, mostly from California, but some from, you know, like we got a lot of people from Brooklyn here that moved into Portland. So it's, and they've ruined that town. And, but
it used to be really cute.
Oh yeah,
my grandma lived there.
It is a latitude thing. I'm like,
and then the Californians.
There's a 1 degree difference between Burlington and Portland.
I think that's genius. A good theory.
Check it out.
Yeah. I'm like, is there like a woke line? And when you pass line. That, it gets more woke.
Well, yes. I mean, Canada is pretty woke.
Yeah, it's the closer you get to Canada.
Yeah,
Texas, Florida, more towards the equator, more based.
Yes, Texas is pretty, except for Austin.
Yeah, Tennessee, Alabama.
Yeah.
I was looking at houses in Alabama the other day.
Los Angeles tends to upend that theorem, though.
It's the water-based.
Yeah. Well, they're on the water.
See, it's next to the water.
Because Houston is not particularly red either.
But then how do you explain Florida? It's surrounded by water.
Florida is almost. You know, with that whole Florida man phenomenon. It's just
supernatural because they have a lot of weird history there.
Yeah, Florida.
There's like weird supernatural history.
Yeah.
Honestly, Florida really is unusual. It's a weird place. And just because it's subtropical too, when you go there, it does feel like you've entered a whole nother country. Like you're just in a totally different country. Yeah. You're not even in America anymore. Well, you are.
You don't even have an accent.
Yeah. I thought they'd have a Southern accent. There's not.
I blame the ley lines. It's something.
The ley lines.
Yeah.
There's a woke ley line. And that's what you guys are.
Yeah. But it doesn't exist on the woke ley line. It exists on like a supernatural ley line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My daughter's dad lives in Florida. So we've been to Florida a lot. And it is. I like it.
Not have an
too
accent?
Hot.
Where did the accent go? I've been there. Like,
it got, you know, pushed out by all the, you know,
a lot of imports.
All the East Coasters, you know, all the East Coasters come down north to that
maybe
south.
It is. Maybe the old people diluted the accent and it like neutralized everything. Because if you cross like Northeast with Southern and a little bit of like Cuba, you get nothing.
Miami is also a very international city. There's a lot of, you know, like European and like Eastern, especially Eastern European investment. So it's just a lot of mixing. And a lot of people come from South America, Central America. So it all gets diluted. And then with everybody moving there from the north, like Florida has been like a migration point for at least the last probably 50 years or so. It's been a running joke about old people going to Florida.
Yeah.
And now it's not just old people, it's like everybody. Do you know what else it is? It's Disney.
Disney. It's a good point. That is a good point.
Disney neutralized the accent of the area.
That is true. Because everyone's going to travel.
Well, and then they bring a lot of, you know, tourism in. They bring a lot of foreign, you know, workers, you know, talent. You know, whether it's, you know, working on the park or working on their content.
Or
trafficking children in the basement of Disney World. Who knows? You know, they do have like sort of an extensive underground city that they have authority over.
Epstein had a house.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He was there too.
Epstein was based sort of in, you know, West Palm
Beach.
And he got in trouble, but didn't really get in trouble there for trafficking teenagers. kids.
Yeah, somehow he got convicted and was like in jail, but not really in jail, yeah. And like going to his office during the day. Like, it's like, what was going?
It's such a weird thing.
Yeah, we were just talking about that on the live stream earlier. There's a Governor DeSantis just signed a new law. They're going to release all the transcripts from his 2006 trial.
Good.
And a lot of names, apparently, you know, of potential clients that were named by the children that they interviewed for that case are going to come out. And that was one of the reasons it was like sealed at the time. But now they were like, none of these people deserve protection. Like,
good.
Out the ball. And I'm like, yes, go DeSantis. Like, DeSantis. Get back to work. It's like funny. He like exits the campaign and all of a sudden I start liking what he's doing again. I'm like, go back to Florida. You're good in Florida.
Be Florida's governor for a while.
Yes. Just
do that forever. Like, I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Like, what's going to happen to Florida once he's done? What if they get someone terrible?
Oh.
They almost did.
Probably maybe. Will.
They're like, they before his election was actually very close. And it was like oh, I can't remember how long ago it was. But eventually the guy came out as like, you know, having like a cocaine fueled orgy with some prostitutes or something. Like, it was just like just total
cocaine.
You're like, oh, typical Democrat, like out and having a, you know, drug fueled orgy with like, you know, like homosexual orgy or something. I think it was gay too. If not,
yeah. Was it a piss orgy? Because I heard about those recently and that sounds wild.
Oh, what one?
Oh,
piss orgy.
We heard some stories.
Ooh. No, this was just a good old fashioned normal one, as far as I know.
Okay. They were just look at this. This episode has everything: piss, shit.
Yeah. Okay, yes. I didn't want to Google it, but I was like, this sounds like what it is, but I don't want to like really look it up. So yeah. I asked the internet, and
you did.
I terrible asked, decision.
Oh, yes, Twitter. Okay, I'm like, yeah. You didn't Google that, did you? Oh, that'd be terrible.
No, I like Grok. Grok is great.
Grok will explain it.
Exactly what it sounds like. It's
like, Grok, what is a piss orgy?
How did we
go ahead and ask it, Brent?
According to my research
about the club,
I don't know. It was before that.
Oh, it was before that. Okay. Before that.
I needed to know. I also have needed to know what eating ass was recently, and I had to ask people about that too. It turns out everything's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah, pretty much.
She's gonna like, stop asking.
It's now. Real?
Yes. I've been married since I was 19.
She is so wholesome and
I do a like, lot of stuff. But like I don't know what it's called.
But like
I've never done that though. I've never done that.
Good to know.
For the record.
She is just this super cool, like you know, homeschooling mom, and like just sometimes things are. I'm glad she doesn't know these things. So
I've done stuff. I just don't know what it's called.
She's been sheltered from traumatic things, which is good.
That's fine. You know, like I'm happy to be able to elaborate these concepts for the heterosexuals.
She gets enough just walking out the door and living in Portland.
I know. Like, oh my God.
You don't need to go on Twitter and ask about piss orgies.
I see a lot of stuff. I know a lot about drugs now just from being around. But I got to tell you, I was scandalized by someone showing me her vibrator the other day.
Because I saw that.
I had never actually like seen one in real life. I've never owned one.
So and I don't innocent.
Friends aside from
this telling. Is what I'm talking about.
You got a husband. You don't need a vibrator when you got a man.
Don't need one, man.
Right? She does.
I've been married for half my life, and he's delightful. So, like, you know, why are we even talking about this?
I don't even know how we got on this subject. Piss orgy. You brought that up.
This always happens to us.
I'm just so happy when straight people make babies. That just like warms the cockles of my heart. I'm just like, good.
I've read lots of times.
Very pro heteronormativity.
I am. You know why? Because I'm the product of heteronormativity. I had a normal mom and dad that were, you know, dad went to work, mom raised the kids and, you know, cooked dinner. And I was thankful for that. I mean, it was amazing. It was great to have mom around should I need something or, and also just to make like food and keep the house in a nice, you know, condition.
That's for, sexist, like, Brent.
Little people to grow up. It's not sexist. It's great. It was wonderful growing up like that.
Yes.
And yeah. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, both, it doesn't matter which sex, which parent does what, but like, it, that's just the way it was in my family, and it worked really well, and I was happy. And I would love for other people to have situations like that where they could grow up and not have a, you know, bad time, and have both parents and have them working together, and you know, making it good for the children. It's just
the whole, like, the feminist movement originally started out to promote looking at motherhood and stuff as an equally valid and important type of job in society. And now it's totally flipped over, and it's like, if women want to be that, oh well, you're just brainwashed by the patriarchy, and you should want to be a high achieving CEO or whatever.
We're both anti-feminist, and I've been my whole life anti-feminist, and I think
we get shat on so hard. Like, I get it a lot just for being a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
Has sex with her husband.
Yeah,
she got dare that. You, miss.
Yeah, we get something. We get similar flack for criticizing the homos as homos. You know, same sort of thing. If you criticize the LGBTQ, it's like you're a traitor. You hate yourself. It's your internalized homophobia. Blah 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 blah. And it's the same stuff when you're a woman and you're like, well, actually, I like being in the traditional role and I want to do that. Oh, well, you just hate yourself. You just want to be subservient to a man. It's like,
How dare you?
Yeah.
And then you're not in the club anymore. And they're just
not in the club anymore. No.
Oh,
super mean.
The meanest girls.
And you know what? I don't even do the laundry. Oh, you don't? Take that, internet. Yeah. My
take that, internet.
I cut the grass and my husband does the laundry. And you know what? Who does the grilling? It's me.
Ooh. Hmm.
Yeah. So.
Upending gender roles one domestic task at a time. See?
Yeah.
Just a little bit more and you'll be non-binary. Do you take the garbage out?
I'm the one who takes the trash bags out to the can, but my husband takes the cans to the road. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and I'm the compost person.
Okay.
But I take all the pictures of garbage.
Yes.
And shit. And
I'm the one with the gun license.
Yes.
Nice. Definitely non-binary.
So
Definitely non-binary.
No, no man.
How hard is it to get a gun license over there?
In Multnomah County, it's kind of annoying, actually. If you live in Clackamas County, it's much faster. But here... I mean, you have to take a class, you have to pay money.
Yeah.
And then you have to sit on your ass and wait for weeks for them to print the card out and send it to you, which if you need it, they're not going to give it to you in a timely manner. But if you live in Clackamas County, they magically have a printer on the premises that will just give you the card the day that you...
On the spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, the county I live in, same. It's the same thing. Yeah, it's not.
But when I lost my license, because I dropped my license when I was out taking pictures of garbage one day, long story, I accidentally lost it in the garbage and I couldn't find it. So I don't know how that happened, to be honest. I just had it in my pocket. But I declared it lost and I sent them the info and I had a new card within like 3 days. And I'm like, if you could do that and you could replace it in 3 days, why couldn't you just give it to me like within... less than a month.
Where I'm from in Elizabeth, New Jersey, you have to actually like write an essay explaining why you need a firearm.
For your God-given rights. Yes.
and you pay like, I think it's like a $500 application fee or some shit too.
Yeah.
And they can still reject you.
And they can still,
No.
You guys definitely suck worse than we do.
Yeah. Oregon, we lack our guns here. They did try and pass something where you don't need more than 10 rounds, which is stupid.
Six.
Oh, was it six?
Six.
Ridiculous. Okay, that's...
I think it's six.
But they took it... Did it go... It went to Oregon Supreme Court. They struck it down.
But the people voted for it, and they're so stupid.
Yeah, the population voted for it.
There was these like old church ladies outside of our library pitching this... bad idea, and I got into an argument with them and I felt bad for it, but I'm like, you guys are so dumb. You think they were like, let's end gun violence, and I'm like, you're gonna end gun violence by
giving up your guns,
sure that the people who are legally carrying a gun have less bullets than the people who aren't? Like, do you think that the people who are doing drive-bys went and took the class and waited a month for their gun license? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's like they're called criminals for a reason. They don't follow the law. No, so, of course, they're not going to follow the gun control laws. They're going to just break the law.
Yeah,
but that's going to end gun violence. I'm sorry. But
that stuff, it only just hurts regular people who want to protect themselves.
Let me ask you, ladies, where do you see the situation in Portland going? Are you seeing it turning around as we are coming out of the pandemic period? Do you think it's going to get worse before it gets better? Like, where, what do you think's happening? What's your feelings on the ground?
It's a toss up. I think people are getting sick of the problems, for sure. Like, they're getting sick enough of it that they're willing to recognize that there is a problem. Even if, like, the cognitive dissonance tries to tell them not to, like, at some point they're like, you know what, I think there's a problem.
I'm black-pilled, so I think it's going to be at least 30 years before, I don't know if Portland will ever see what it was at its zenith, because I think that everybody here is crazy. So that's not very nice way of saying it. You're not, but the majority of the population is so just, I don't know, zombie brains, you know, like they cannot connect the dots between I voted for these policies or this person to what they're actually seeing. And sometimes they even lie to themselves about what they're actually seeing. But this next, they voted in a new city council system that is using ranked choice voting, but proportional, which there is a chance that you could actually elect people who are not crazy to office, and they have to run. There are some people running.
Bothersome.
Yeah.
Like who? Yeah.
So I would say I would like to wait and see if they actually get some reasonable people. If they elect there's a lot of crazy communists running in these districts. Like people, I'm like,
I have a name, and I'm not going to say it.
Yeah. Oh,
this reminds me of just a tweet that one of my mutuals tweeted today. Do you guys know Heidi Briones?
Oh, we love Heidi.
She's coming to parties.
Yeah.
Heidi tweeted, I was going to run for Portland City Council, but then I realized I hate all these people. So I'm moving to Portland instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just trying to make it really difficult for people to live here too. Like the costs that they keep piling on us with the electricity and the water, like people's electrical bills are shocking because of the green initiatives that they're doing. And
that's not just in Portland either. It's
the water everywhere. Bills here are bad. Like I'll say our car insurance went up like it's doubled just by living here. And so we have a really big bill coming up just to own a car here. And my husband does wonder if it's a little bit my speeding, but like, I don't think that I sped my way like more into this. I think it's the car theft and
it
like,
is
because people's cars get stolen here.
Yeah.
Like crazy.
For, I don't know how many months, but what I heard was a lot of insurance companies would not insure Kias because of the Kia boys. So, and I actually looked up Kia rates, because I was looking at a Kia wagon and then like a Buick wagon thing. And
a Buick wagon?
It's like a...
That sounds like the lamest thing I've ever heard of. How did you do that?
Really?
Yeah. It's like something...
Well, I'll tell you why. Because the Kia insurance was like triple of the Buick.
Okay, and nobody does want to...
Nobody wants to steal the Buick. You can't steal the Buick.
You can steal it.
But you can steal the Kia easier. So the theft is so rampant here that I actually have a friend who owns a business.
I'm sorry. This is the first I heard of this. I don't mean to shame you on camera.
Weren't they even, like, I remember, like, vaguely hearing that they were, like, trying to sue Kia because...
Oh,
like,
really?
Trying to sue them or something because the cars were too easy to steal instead of actually just busting.
Well, and there's such a problem. car theft here that, you know, it was difficult for people in the Portland metro area to actually get any kind of insurance at all.
Yeah.
So they buy a brand new car, which you're, if you're financing it, you have to have insurance. And then they couldn't get insurance on it. And it was a real problem.
And it's really expensive now.
Yeah. And I have a friend who has like a, I'm not going to say what his business is, but working on houses. And he lives in the next county over, but works mostly here. And they had a vehicle accident that wasn't, it was like a fender bender, but somehow they finagled, you know, like a big settlement out of their neck hurting. And their insurance canceled them, only accident they'd ever had. And they, it took them 3 weeks to find insurance, and they would have been unable to continue with his multi-million dollar business if they couldn't have found insurance. And it's because they did not want to insure vehicles in Portland. And it wasn't just the vehicles either, because it was, you know, workers' comp and liability coverage on these businesses. And so there's so much risk here.
And you don't, like, they don't stop you for not having a license plate on your vehicle here.
Yeah.
So if you don't have to have a license plate on a vehicle, you can just steal somebody's shit and take the plates off or replace them with something else and keep driving around. Like,
that's crazy.
They do whatever they want. Like, you know, something sketchy is going down if somebody's rolling through your neighborhood with no license plates and they're stealing a catalytic converter or whatever they're doing.
Oh, she's heard it where they're like cutting out the catalytic converter on the street out here.
Dude, I stop people with a gun in like the middle of the night in my pajamas because they were cutting out somebody's catalytic converter. But the worst was when it was in the middle of the day. Like, have you no shame?
No shame.
Just like, what was the vehicle that got dumped in our neighborhood as a gang hazing initiative? Somebody stole somebody else's car, dumped it in our neighborhood, threw garbage and disgusting stuff all in and over it, tagged it up with like a bunch of profanity and then blood killer, because I guess it was like a Crips initiation thing. It gets dumped across the street from our house and we like can't get the city to get rid of it. And so it was just sitting there. And so I threw like a sheet over it so my kids wouldn't have to see fuck every time they walked out the front door, because it was just like there in red spray paint.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, some people came up and just like cut the catalytic converter out at 2 in the afternoon. I'm like sitting on my porch reading a book and all of a sudden there's this grinding and I'm looking and it's like this couple that don't even look like they would be criminals just cutting it out. And
maybe that's like their side hustle.
I mean, at this point, why would anyone even want to be like a police officer in this place?
Yes, it's a problem. They have a recruiting problem.
They do.
And the police are treated terribly by the public. We've actually seen that.
We have. And we know them. Like, we've talked to them.
You know, like, it's a rough job. So.
Is there a hiring freeze in
Portland right now?
No, they're like.
They're just desperate. They're
begging people. Like, they were advertising that they needed people.
The NYPD has a hiring freeze, basically. They canceled the next 5 police academy classes.
Hmm. Really?
Do they have enough officers?
No. They're the ones they have are all working overtime.
I'm very confused by this.
Yeah, because there was I think it was a law that got passed in the wake of the George Floyd riots or something, and they, you know, are hurriedly canceled, like, you know, a bunch of police academy classes and instituted a hiring freeze. And ever since then, police have just been leaving. So the ones they have left, they overtime.
Yeah.
And it's a big problem now in the city budget because they've been paying these cops overtime, trying to get them to work 60, 80 hours a week because they have the work, they have the shifts.
Isn't the mayor... Wasn't he a cop before?
He was.
Yeah.
I think Adams was, yeah.
Yeah. He's just, you know, he's very happy that he's Black and he's got a lot of Black help in the city. There was a speech recently he gave where he talked about how much chocolate was running the city. His words, not mine.
Wait, yeah, because that's what's important.
You can look that speech up. Like, just type in, like, Eric Adams... talks about how much chocolate is on the city council or in the city government or something, and It was ridiculous. And he, you know, he's just basically deflecting because the city's in crisis over the illegal immigrant situation.
Yeah.
I think it's like 160,000, 180,000 illegals right now.
That kind of leads me, I guess, into the last thing I want to talk about too is like, well, what's that like over there? Is there a situation with illegal immigration? And another thing we didn't really touch on, but it's definitely part of all this, is the fentanyl crisis and how many of the people on the streets over there, like, it's not meth that's the big problem anymore right now. It's fentanyl.
It's fentanyl. Definitely
fentanyl. And that's all, most of it's coming over the border.
Yes.
It is. It's Hondurans too. Like, well, they talk about the Hondos in the park.
Aren't they doing the dealing, or are they doing the running, like getting it up here?
I'm not sure. They're the ones who are dealing it in the parks.
Okay.
And they have like kids. They're using minors to sell. They say like if you go out into the evening, you encounter the Hondos and they've got all the fentanyl and kids with guns and stuff.
I live about an hour and a half south of here in Linn County. And I just saw something come up yesterday on my news break talking about how they had a Linn County sheriff officer had pulled over a car and the occupants were acting suspicious. They have Hispanic names. They called out a drug dog and they discovered fentanyl powder and then a lot of pills. Like, I'm not sure how it's because I don't know about making drugs, but like, and it was a massive amount. And, you know, they're running it up. They run it up I-5 and I'm assuming it comes over through, you know, like San Diego, Southern California. And there's the cartel. My personal theory is the cartel is very involved with the Oregon government. We legalized pot. Yet there are still a lot of illegal grows, especially in Southern Oregon, so much so that it's causing a drought because they require a lot of water. And that is the cartel. I mean, like, oh my God, there's a pot shop in my little town of 10,000 people. I think there's like 3 or 4 pot shops. Like one could serve everybody's needs, but this is
variety. You need sales on different days, dude.
So this is what made me initially suspicious of, you know, like what's going on here. But there was a thing where the Secretary of State was moonlighting for this couple that owned a massive pot shop chain, and they got their license within like, you know, 2 weeks instead of a year. And they just appeared here in Portland from Florida out of nowhere and opened all these pot shops. And I don't know, the whole thing, I'm not going to delve into it here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was not going to say their
name. Sounds like nepotism for sure.
I think it's the cartel, but
yeah.
And
I think there is something to that. I mean,
to all of the politicians, to our governor, yeah. Secretary of State had to resign because she was moonlighting for them for $10,000 a month. You know, like they're dirty, and that you can literally look at these people, and they run a thing called Emerge Oregon, which is training these progressive candidates for office. And the LaMotta people, just might as well say it.
We're going to get killed.
Now. Yeah. And
I'm not suicidal.
Like they're just in all of the Democrats' pockets. So it's not good. So there's definitely a problem, even though, you know, pot being legal, I think whatever, but it's created problems. Yeah. And we definitely have illegal immigrants. I'm not calling them migrants ever. I was married to a man who immigrated legally. And I just think it's so freaking insulting to call these people who broke the laws to get here migrants. So there have been hotels that have been taken over by illegal immigrants here. And somebody else covered that like a year ago, even a hotel. And he tried to talk to people and they were like shooing him away, and you know, and that was out by the airport out here. So we see the drugs and we see the illegals. It's here too.
Yeah. And the fentanyl has taken over
the
whole drug scene. Like, because it's so cheap.
So cheap.
It's so cheap, mm-hmm. So addictive and so potent that people just can't stop using it. And it's done something to people. It's affected their psyches in some way that, like other drugs, people could either come out of it or they could still kind of function. But like, I mean, I've talked to people
personally on the streets who, like, if they don't do fentanyl, they know somebody who does, and they say their soul is taken away. Yep. They're not the same person anymore. They're a slave to this. This is the only thing I think about. Like, even when they're not high, all they're thinking about is just getting it again. And they're not like, they don't even care about people. Like, they're
so sad.
Turned off to humanity. It's like having zombies.
Well, it's like that lady that was robbing her friend while he was overdosing, and they were, it was fentanyl, yeah, I yeah. think. And it was just total lack of humanity.
It's wild.
Scary. It is scary. I mean, I've definitely seen that sort of thing on the streets of New York, and fentanyl is definitely being sold over there as well.
But, oh, in my small town, like, you know, 10,000 people. It's being sold there too. We have homeless people. We have homeless encampments, and in the next town over, there's a lot. And they're all doing fentanyl.
It's cheap. You can get it for a couple
bucks. Very concerning.
Giving it to the cartel. Cartel's taking it here, yeah. and they're destroying a generation of people.
I like. There was a tag. There was a massive tag on Burnside that said that something like fentanyl was Mandarin for victory, or something. It was maybe not victory, but it was like in conquest. I think it was victory, but basically they were alluding to the fact that they were invading and
it's a weapon.
Yeah,
it is a weapon. It's a bioweapon
that they were destroying us, that they were defeating us with fentanyl, but they didn't even have to like come in here and do it. They were just sending it in. It's
following
like,
us.
From it's like a bioweapon. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like a bioweapon that doesn't even, it's not contagious, but.
Yeah, it's like a weapon of soul destruction and economic destruction, because you take these people out of the, you basically take them out of the economy. They become these sort of automatous, homeless, addicted, mentally ill, just sort of sideshow. And
there's they are more. They become an economy because there's a whole economy in like taking care of them and like. It's
NGOs and you know, all of it.
Yeah, like the millions. Nonprofits, like that not only are they taken out of productive society, but we have a whole chunk of like society and money being dumped into taking care of them, but they're not really taking care of them. It's just
yeah.
Like,
it's facilitating, which is making also, it worse. And
yeah.
This is also why, you know, in the intelligence agencies like the CIA and stuff deal heavily in the drug market, because the product sells itself. You know, mm-hmm. you don't gotta, you know, promote it. You don't have to do advertising. You don't have to do any of that. It just sells itself. And then
Where is our CIA that's yeah. supposed to be so concerned yeah. with the American national security? Yeah. National security, they tell us every
they're,
time.
They're taking that cut.
Yeah.
They're taking their cut of that fentanyl money. Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is like the money is untraceable. So it's perfect for your black budget. It's perfect for your special access programs and shit you want to fund without having that money be traceable. And yeah, it's a product where you are assured customers for like basically ever.
Yeah.
Until they die.
Until they die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you get new ones.
And yeah. we have this sort of like emerging industrial complex over here where they take care of the illegals. So there's all this money for processing and housing and where does it come from? You know, it's a combination of private, you know, and public funds that were solicited through grants and by these like weird organizations that you've never heard of that have tangential connections to George Soros and probably cartels behind the scenes. You know, they're probably laundering a lot of cartel money.
It's like they're killing. It's like they're killing the citizens of the country and then like replacing them with something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And God forbid you actually like, you know, discuss that in any sort of like realistic. And we see it also happening in Europe, you know, in Ireland right now. It's a big, big controversy because African refugees or illegal immigrants get all of this preferential treatment. And then the Irish citizens get treated like they're, you know, secondhand garbage. Yeah. It's like, it's unbelievable.
Like they've just had their culture taken away from them. And they've already had that happen at the hands of other people, but it's like they're having it done to themselves.
In their own.
It's fine though. It's white people oppressing culture.
Yeah. No big deal.
No big deal. It's also absurd.
Well, I'm getting sleepy. Should we wrap it up? And do you want to tell the people out there in the world where they can find you?
Honey Badger Mom, HUNNY, on Twitter. And then I have a Substack that I'm going to pin, all the stuff that I've done. And then
send Brent the link. He'll put it in the
description. I'll put links in the description.
Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah, you can find me in the ghetto. yeah, I'm Cocaine Michelle on Twitter, otherwise known as Garbage Ghost. I guess you can look up either of those.
Yeah.
And Cocaine Michelle on Substack, which I'm not good at doing, but I'm trying.
Yeah, Garbage Ghost. It's because you're haunting the garbage. You float around.
I started my photo career taking pictures of garbage. Because it was just everywhere, and I was upset by it, and I decided to just make it into art instead of being mad all the time. There's the drive-by. It's not mine.
Yeah, no, it's probably, the college kids are always ripping it up and down here, which is the only noise complaint I really have about where I am.
College kids.
I get wind. I'm out on the island here. I get windy wind, and that's about it.
That sounds nice, actually.
Triggers the dog. He likes to bark at the things. And occasionally deer frolic through the backyard, which is
cool. Nice.
Oh, that's Radar. Nice. I do miss him. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for watching. Reminder, like, share, comment, subscribe. Give us money because we're grifters and fascists and blah, blah, blah. And bigots and all those things. Help us grift.
Very poor.
Poor grifters. Whoever would have thought.
Like gang signs or something. Be like... Wait, white. Is that white?
Oh man, ladies, thank you so much for joining us and, you know, bearing witness and being brave and going out there and doing what you do. It takes a lot of guts, especially as ladies. You know, you are more vulnerable as ladies.
And mothers, thank you, moms, for raising babies and keeping humanity going.
And you know, also on that note, men, stand up and protect these women and do what they're doing. Be brave, man, because I feel like there's not as many men doing it. At least I feel that way. I'm not seeing it as much. Like we mentioned Burlington earlier, it's three gay guys who are
at the
forefront of pushing, you know, pushing back against
the world. They're all ripped. They have great bodies.
I think that's part of what it is. You know, I think a lot of the straight men are scared to say anything.
They're also busy, you know, like with life and things, but it's, you know, things are important. You gotta make time for the important things. And
yeah, well, pushing back against this authoritarian shit, I think is important.
Especially for the dads that have children that want their children to have grandchildren and have their children on and on and on. Like,
well, you want them to grow up in, like, I don't know, a nice place where there's not shit everywhere, human feces and piss. Like, that would be cool.
Or to have dad end up in jail because he tried doing the right thing.
Right? Daniel Penny, we hope you are found not guilty.
Crazy.
Exactly.
All right. Take care, everyone. Thanks again. Have a good night. See ya.
Bye-bye.